The court will now move to the fifth case of the morning, which is number 043373, Brummett against Sinclair Broadcasting Company. Mr. Baker.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Baker. I represent the appellant, Tony Brummett, in this case this morning. We are here on a grant of summary judgment entered by the district court in a Title VII race discrimination claim. Now, the district court granted summary judgment concluding that my client could not point to a similarly situated individual, thus not being able to establish his prima facie case. In so doing, the district court was in error, and that is our argument here this morning. Now,
Who's your best similarly situated example?
Well, Judge Wood, we established two before the district court, Jennifer Valenti and Tim Snodgrass.
Right, now, but let's take Jennifer Valenti. You, on page 14 of your brief, have put out a chart. But I have to say, what jumps off the page from that chart to me is that her totals for the year in question were 227,524, whereas Mr. Brummett was at the 137,959 level. Now, I grant you, you've played around with the percentages of monthly goals, but why isn't a company entitled to say that that's not the same thing, that you treat the person who's bringing in the greater amount of sales differently?
Well, and I suppose under certain circumstances they could. The question is,
why would you infer race discrimination from the fact that Valenti continues and Mr. Brummett doesn't?
Well, again, the inference goes through the prima facie case, which is an indirect method of establishing race discrimination.
No, I know, but I mean, I guess I'm saying, why is she similarly situated when they're clearly so different in terms of productivity?
Well, I don't know that they are. The question becomes,
but the numbers, I mean, you're not disputing that these numbers that you put in are correct, are you?
Absolutely not. I put them into my brief. They are correct. They are an extrapolation from the evidence that was submitted.
Right.
What I would suggest to you, that the proper way to analyze how a sales representative is performing is by the percentage of the quota which they are achieving.
But why must that be the way the company looks at it? I'm not going to disagree with you that it's certainly one way they could have looked at it, but apparently it's not what they did.
Well, and I suppose in response to that, I would say if you looked at some of the other sales representatives, there were other sales representatives out there, and I think we cited them in our reply brief, who were actually performing, as far as total dollar value, less than what Mr. Brummett was performing. Now, it was, again, because their goals were set at a significantly less rate than what Mr. Brummett was. Sinclair has never come in and said there's a magical number that an employee must achieve in order to continue in employment. And in fact, when I deposed the sales manager, what he said to me, I asked the question, you know, if Brummett gets 100% of his quota, is he fired? And the response is no. And so I think that had Brummett gotten 100% of his quota, I think that there is a fair question of fact that he would not have been terminated. As such, I think that constitutes evidence that that is the way that sales representatives are evaluated. And I think that, you know, you can look at Mr. Snodgrass, and Mr. Snodgrass's sales were less than
what
Mr. Brummett's
were. But he left before the 6 months was up, right?
He left before 6 months was up. However, that's assuming that there is something magical about this six-month point in time.
But he never reached the point where he was earning only what he brought in, basically. Didn't he have the same guaranteed payment for the first 6 months?
As far as a dollar level, I don't know. But certainly for the first 6 months.
I don't know
if
it was the same dollars, but the same structure.
Correct. The way Sinclair claims they do things is for the first 6 months, individuals are given a guaranteed draw against commissions. Then after the six-month period has ended, that draw no longer continues. But again, that refers to compensation as opposed to performance of this particular sales representative. There's absolutely no indication that Mr. Snodgrass was ever counseled about not performing up to expectations. There's absolutely no evidence that he was ever disciplined for not living up to the expectations that Sinclair supposedly had upon him.
But counsel, to be similarly situated with your client, he has to have been retained by the company despite failing to make his quotas, and that's not the fact here because he quit before his probationary period was up.
Well, that's assuming there's a probationary period. There's not a probationary period. There is no six-month probationary period. The only thing that's magical about that six-month period of time is that that's when the compensation package changes. There is nothing else magical about that. There's no probationary period that says for the first 6 months we'll let you work and then at the end of the 6 months we're going to evaluate you and see what happens, or that you are a probationary employee for 6 months. That's not the facts. The facts are very simply that 6 months is only relevant for salary.
Was Mr. Snodgrass retained by the company during a time period in which he was a commission-only salesperson? That's what it takes to be similarly situated to your client. And it's my understanding that that's not the facts.
The answer to your question is no. Now, I would disagree with the underlying legal assumption that that's the only way that he can be similarly situated to my client. And, you know, again, we're breaking it down into this notion that somehow compensation arrangements are entitling someone or are an element of the similarly situated prong. And I just don't believe that that's what this court has ever held. The district court doesn't cite any authority from this case or any other case, for that matter, when discussing similarly situated. In fact, the Ajayi decision indicated four separate factors which are looked at. First, did the two hold the same job description? Absolutely. Mr. Brummett, Ms. Valenti, and Mr. Snodgrass were all sales representatives. They all had exactly the same conduct, whatever. They also, the second element is, were subject to the same standards. Absolutely, they were subjected to exactly the same standards.
Mr. Baker, before you go through the other two, though, let me suggest another way of looking at this case that, at least from what I can tell from the briefs, may come somewhat closer to what was really going on. It's not my impression that anyone else other than Mr. Brummett was attempting to enforce the kind of contractual arrangement that Mr. Brummett understood that he had with Mr. Evans in making his original decision to leave his other job and come to this employer, to Sinclair and its TV station. And had it not been for, you know, in other words, if Mr. Brummett had been perfectly happy, you know, 1 month to have a $300 draw and another month to have a $10,000 draw and another month something else, it's my strong impression none of this would have come up, because on a commission-only basis, you know, what does the company care? You know, you bring in what you bring in, and they're not really responsible for anything. But he's pushing at them to enforce this contract that he understood that he had, which, taking the facts favorably to him, he did have. And the district judge at one point says he may have had a perfectly good contract claim, but what one can't find here is any evidence of discrimination on the basis of race.
And in response to that, Judge Wood, what I would indicate to you is, if that was their justification for why they fired him, if they came in and said, look, you're becoming a pain, you're complaining about this,
exactly,
and we're
going
to fire you, then that's a perfectly legitimate explanation. That's not their explanation. Their explanation is he's not performing up to their legitimate expectations. Now, the question in a pretext analysis is there evidence from which a jury could conclude that what they are saying is their justification is false? So in this, in your analogy, if a jury came up with that conclusion, a jury said, hey, look, there's no evidence of race, but we think they're lying about why they fired him. According to this court's precedent, according to the precedent of the Supreme Court, a jury would be perfectly within its rights to conclude that race was a motivating factor in the determination.
Okay.
I will reserve the rest of mine for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. We'll hear now from Mr. Karoff.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is John Karoff, and I do represent Sinclair Broadcast in this matter. Mr. Brummett's case fails, Your Honors, for several different reasons. It fails because he has no comparable co-worker, as the Court has already touched upon this morning. It fails because he wasn't performing his job appropriately.
And but why do you say that when, in fact, once he changes from the guaranteed draw to the commission, why isn't every account he brings in just so much the better for the company? Where does all of a sudden this expectation of this extremely difficult, I might even say impossible, as the district judge says, performance plan that materializes only after he's complaining about their failure to live up to his agreement with Mr. Evans? You know, selling a minimum of one Olympic package and one career connection campaign when people went long periods of time without selling any of these things?
The reason we say he was not performing correctly was, unlike some of the other sales folks, his job was to come in and bring in new business, go out and prospect and find new business. The numbers on his performance improvement plan that he was given were designed, according to the testimony of the folks from Sinclair, were in mind to show him what he needed to produce if he wanted to earn the level of income he was desiring. If he wanted to earn $38,000.
You're saying you're being paternalistic now. You're saying, well, you know, if you want the $38,000, this is what you have to do. Why did you have to threaten to fire him if he didn't meet his own goals?
Because there's an expense to the sales people. They are provided health insurance. They're provided office space. They're provided certain reimbursements. If a seller does...
In the record?
Pardon?
What is that in the record?
There is in the record. You'll note, and I think the judge even cites it in her opinion. Mr. Connor's original memoranda to his superiors at the corporate headquarters, where he points out, we have nothing budgeted on the expense side for a seventh seller, and so this is going to be a heavily developmental job.
But there's no data about the actual expense of carrying somebody who's in a developmental stage of a career like this.
You're right, Your Honor. There is not a detailed record of that, but mm-hmm. there was an expense side to it, as Mr. Connors, I believe, pointed out in that memorandum. And so,
but we don't know. I mean, maybe Mr. Brummett, even with the level of accounts he was bringing in, was covering his own expenses.
The record wouldn't. You're right, Your Honor.
No
the
idea.
Record would not tell us one way or the other.
Okay.
I was just trying to respond to what
right,
if he does nothing,
I understand.
And there's going to be inherent something in there.
Okay.
I would also say, and probably the most important thing about this case, is that Mr. Brummett has done nothing to suggest that his race had any bearing on anything here. And I think Mr. Baker, in his pretext analysis, kind of tries to move past that point a little bit too quickly. Yes, falsity is the first stage of the pretext. But the opinions of this court have said repeatedly over the years that you show us falsity and you show us a reason to believe that discrimination was, in fact, had some bearing on this matter. Our reason to believe
it. The Supreme Court has said in Reeves and St. Mary's and other cases, if you can get to the point of showing that the employer offers one reason for firing you and you can introduce at the summary judgment stage evidence to suggest that that's a lie, and then you get to your trial and the jury says they're lying about firing this man, the jury is entitled to draw the inference that it's an impermissible reason. Why would you lie otherwise?
But in this case, I think they've asked and answered their own question by saying, yes, all right, it's a lie, but the real reason was this contract theory, that they didn't want to honor the contract. Again, you're still a step short from anything having to do with race, I believe, in the case. So I think that doesn't get them to where they need to be. We still need something in this case beyond that to show that there was a racial element at play here. The comparability factors are simply not here between the people being set forth. There's nothing there which would raise a race element. You have Mr. Brummett, 7 months of employment, trying to compare himself to somebody of over 4 years of employment and to somebody who's already gone by the time the comparability factors arise. This business of bringing in new business, I think, is very crucial here. Mr. Brummett was supposed to be bringing in new business. That was not the expectation on Valente. The principal expectation. She had a book of business to service, and And in fact, she was going out and drawing in more new business than Mr. Brummett was, even though she already had a book of business to service. Statistically, I think the record will show you that there was a variety of statistics that the Connors, Mr. Connors and Mr. Faith reviewed. Meeting quotas was only just one of them. So I think their comparability standards fare very poorly in trying to find somebody who they could find to be comparable. To the extent there is any racial record in this case, it shows Channel 20, WICS-TV, was being favorable to the African-American employees they had. Obviously, Mr. Connors knew Mr. Brummett's race when he was hired. If he had a racial bias, why would he even hire the gentleman? There was another African-American representative alluded to in the record who was starting to fall off on his abilities. Mr. Connors stepped in and protected him and told Mr. Evans, don't touch him. He's fine where he's at. And there is evidence in the record that Mr. Brummett at one time complained about a co-worker who made a comment he interpreted as being racially disparaging. The evidence is Sinclair's management personnel jumped all over the situation and reprimanded the offending employee. So there's really nothing, Your Honors, in this case which suggests that this is a race case. It may be a case of management, which people may not like the way it was managed or handled, but it's certainly not a race case. And for that reason, we would ask that the decision of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
You have 1 minute left, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Judge. So much to say, so little time in which to do it. First off, Mr. Karoff raised the same actor inference. This court has emphatically rejected that, and I would point to Caddis versus MCI. I think that establishes that. I also want to address this notion that somehow Mr. Brummett was specifically hired in order to drum up new business, and that was only what he was hired to do. That simply is not true. What Mr. Brummett was hired to do, and the reason Mr. Evans gave him that particular guarantee, was in order to get Mr. Brummett there. Mr. Evans, in his own deposition testimony, stated that he had told Mr. Brummett he was going to give him enough accounts so that he would be able to maintain an income of at least $38,000. Mr. Brummett was hired away from another station. Mr. Brummett had a good job. He went to this particular job because it gave him an opportunity to go to the number one seller in the, or excuse me, the number one company in the market. So he was not hired. If you look at the job descriptions for Ms. Valenti, Mr. Snodgrass, and Mr. Brummett, they're all identical. I see that my time has expired. I thank the court and would ask that the court reverse the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.